Hello, gentlemen, barbarian savages, Rooster here, and today I'm going to talk to you about Dino Planet series a little bit more, all the way up here, barbarism, savagery, tribalism, coming to the end of our Dino Planet series. This is actually my favorite subject on the Dino Planet series. I love barbarism, savagery, tribalism. My opinion, tribalism is the perfect point for men and women. It is the perfect lifestyle. It's the perfect level of government. It is the way human beings were made to live on this planet. So this little section right here, for me, would be my paradise. That's where I would want to be. But I want to direct you to some guys that are smarter than me about this stuff. There's a guy out there named Sebastian Younger, and he's an author. He wrote the book The Perfect Storm about the ship and the big wave and all that stuff. They made it into a movie with a couple of those big actors. Mark Wahlberg, I think, was one of them. Well, he also wrote a book called Tribe. And it is probably one of the best books I have ever read about tribalism and its effect on men and women and societies and how it works. It's highly recommended. Also, some of these conclusions that I've come through over my lifetime have been written about by Ben Franklin also. Ben Franklin wrote some letters, and they're condensed. You can find them on YouTube. It's called The Savages of North America, and it's about the American Indians. And one of the big things in there, and part of the reason why I think this is the perfect kind of lifestyle, is something that Ben Franklin talked about in this, in The Savages of North America. He couldn't explain, and the anthropologists of the time could not explain why, when Indian children were taken from the Indians and raised in white culture in the cities of Boston, Philadelphia, New York City, Manhattan, and then later in their teens or their 20s or even in their 30s, they were taken back to their Indian ancestors or to their Indian lands. A lot of them, in fact, most of them, didn't want to go back to the city. They wanted to stay with their original Indian parents. And you know, they would be like, why? You have all of this stuff. You have school. You have, you know, tea time and all of this great stuff and living in the city, and they didn't want to have anything to do with it. And some of these people, they actually had to tie them up after a week or two staying with their Indian parents and haul them back to the city to live with their white parents. And furthermore, when Indians took white children in and raised them as Indians, and then later on in the 1790s and the up to 1800, 1810, the French Indian War, the whites moved west and overrun these Indian places in Indiana, North Dakota, South Dakota, along the Mississippi River and stuff, and found white children that had grown up as Indians. They took them in and tried to accommodate them into white life. All of them would run back to the Indian side. The first chance that they got, they ran back to their tribes. And the anthropologists could not figure this out when you have all of these luxuries and all of this wonderful stuff, and on the one side with the whites and civilized world, and it's so great. And they couldn't figure out why both the Indians and the whites would run back to the Indian side. And it's because of tribalism. And it's because of barbarianism and savagery, and tribalism is the way human beings are meant to live. It is the perfect match of nature, natural laws, living with nature, and the point of it is there's no money involved either. Money, the root of all evil, is not involved in any of this stuff with tribalism. Early on, later on, it rears its ugly head. Now, when I talk about that, I'll give you another example directly from my life. I have a friend, and he tells this story. He's about 65 years old now, maybe 66, and he tells the story of the summer of 1984. And he tells the story of summer of 1984 over and over and over and over. I've heard it 100 times. And he always brings it up. And I always let him tell it because he talks about how him and his son in the summer of 1984, they left the city. They came up onto the Asabo River. They pitched a tent and they lived off the land, eating fish, drinking out of the river, just hanging out in that tent and in the middle of the woods next to the river for 4 months, you know, from May to September, till the kid had to go back to school. And how great that was. And he relives that over and over and over every time he tells a story. And every time I hear the story, it makes me think of tribalism. So that is the one thing in his life of 65 years, the summer of 1984 is the best vacation that he's ever had. And what did he do? He pitched a tent in the woods and lived off the land, ate fish for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, ate squirrels, had a campfire every night, looked at the stars. And that's really the way to live. You think about this. When is the last time that you have seen a sunrise? Not sitting in your car, pulling your visor down because it's blocking the road on your way to work. Just watch the sunrise or a sunset. When is the last time you laid out in the middle of nowhere and just looked up at the stars and watched the stars for an hour or two? Never. A year, 10 years, 15 years, maybe more than that. It's just not something that we do anymore. We're not in touch with it. Why are fireplaces so popular? Why does every culture on our planet have campfires? Because one of the best feelings in the world is sitting in a lawn chair with a cold beer, watching that fire crackle and getting a little freaking buzz on with 5 or 10 people sitting around you. It's probably one of the most common things that everybody's done. Everybody's had a campfire, right? And you can just sit there and stare at that fire for hours and hours and hours. Why is that? That is something that is genetically in us. It's something that it's been with us since the caveman days, just staring at that fire. If you imagine how many of our ancestors did that for hours and hours and hours and hours on end, right? So what is the tribalism thing? What is the basics of the tribalism thing? It is fundamentally the most perfect and basic level of government. You have, usually the Indians or any of the tribal groups or anything like that, had a chief of maybe 400 or 500 people and a council of elders that gave the chief advice. So they had one person that made the decision, and they had 5 or 6, maybe 10 other counselors, elder people, that advised that chief on that decision, but then when he made it, it was done. So, going to war, what we're going to eat, what we're going to hunt for, when we're going to hunt, you know, who we're going to kill, what are the laws, you know, don't steal, don't kill, you know, had one guy that made these laws, right, and a council that advised him. That's a perfect form of government. And it's a and there's just tribes are just big enough to get all of the local stuff done. You can build a road with a tribe. You can build a house with a tribe. You can build houses with a tribe. You can build a neighborhood with a tribe. You can have a small army with a tribe. You can protect yourself with a tribe. So you can get all of the things that you need done government-wise. You can have a legal system with a tribe. You can dole out punishments with a tribe. You know, but there's no need. You're not at the level yet where you need taxation. That's really good. There's no taxation. There may be social consequences for something that you do. You have sex with your neighbor's wife in the other teepee, you know, you might be outcast from the tribe or you might be stoned to death. You know, you don't know what the chief's going to come up with, you know, as your punishment. So it's the perfect, perfect level of government for governing groups of people, 5,000 down to probably 500 or even 100. The other part of it is people don't realize how hard they work nowadays for the government and for themselves. And back in those times, you worked at your leisure. You didn't have to go hunting every day. You would spend 3 or 4 days, you know, piddling around. You get firewood, you know. You have 5,000 other people that are doing the same thing that the chief wants done. You know, you get a little bit of firewood, work for maybe 3 hours out of the day, then you go take a nap, take a siesta, hit the teepee, bang the old lady, right? Get up, it's time for dinner, you know. And you were taught skills of survival so that you could do this stuff. And maybe once a week you'd go on a hunting trip, you know, for 3 days and you'd be gone and come back with a couple elk, maybe some deer or whatever to feed everybody in the tribe. And if the tribe's big enough, maybe you'd have 5 or 6 hunting parties that would go out in different directions to make sure that everybody got enough food. But that's the beautiful thing about this section is after the 30 years is over and all of the diseases and everything that came from the downfall of society and it starts to rebuild, there's this little section right, you know, right here of maybe 5 generations, maybe 3 generations, maybe even 10, 15, 20 generations of barbarism, savagery. Are you going to have battles and feuds and stuff between the different tribes? Yeah, sure. The Indians fought each other all the time. That's the beautiful thing to keep your skills high. And it's also a population control device. I mean, predators control the number of rabbits on the plains. You know, foxes control rabbits. You know, so it's the same thing. Killing each other and tribal warfare is part of the human condition. We do it right now. We just don't kill each other anymore. We still have the tribalism going on Facebook and Twitter and arguments between, you know, that's why we have football teams and baseball teams and stuff like that. That's tribalism between different cities and different states. Why do you think the NFL is so popular? You know, why do you think soccer is so popular around the world? Because it's tribalism. This team beats that team. In the old tribal days, it would be this tribe kills that tribe and takes their women, but now they play football instead. So that's all I had to say about that. Like I said, I think this is the perfect, perfect level of government. It's the perfect way to live. It's the way human beings, men and women, were both meant to live. And I think this is the way that we live in harmony. Well, the only place where you really see that anymore, and it's not even really there, is in the Amish, currently today. And they're still kind of a tribal community, but not really. They're passive and stuff like that. And you see tribal communities in the military. Ships. I'll give you how tribal it was. I was in the military for 20 years, right? And the number of people that I talked to from high school, maybe two. Number of people that I talked to from college, maybe three. Number of people that I talked to from all the jobs that I've had over my entire life, different professions, maybe four, maybe five. But the number of guys that I still talk to from the Navy, from my first ship, my second ship, my third ship, my reserve centers, stuff like that, over 100. And each one of those guys and me have special time, or groups of us have special stories that we can tell, and special times on watch, and do you remember that time that this happened and stuff like that, because unlike any of those other things, high school, college, and work places, when you live on a ship with someone 24 hours a day and you go out to sea for 9 months at a time, and the only people that are on that ship is those same 700 guys or 800 guys or 300 guys, depending on how big your ship is, you become a family. You become a tribe. And the level of trust and companionship and camaraderie that you develop in that kind of a situation is 100 times higher than you ever have out in the civilian world, right? So those are the two places that you really only see that I've seen in my life, that you really see tribalism, is in the military and in the Amish. So, and again, I recommend those two books. One is Tribe. It's written by Sebastian Younger. The second one is Benjamin Franklin's survey on the savages of North America. That's all I got. The next thing that we're going to talk about is the recreation and the Renaissance and the beginning of the patriarchy, which all the feminists are yelping about. That's all I got, guys. Take it easy. Hope you enjoy it.